I glanced over to Alan and admired his clean, new colonial blue dress uniform, in no small part because I was wearing one just like it. "Damn, Alan," I said. "We sure look good." "I've always loved a man in uniform," Alan said to me. "And now that I'm the man in the uniform, I love him even more." "Uh-oh," I said. "Here comes Master Sergeant Ruiz." Ruiz had spotted me waiting to board my shuttle. As he approached, I put down the duffel bag that contained my everyday uniform and few remaining personal belongings, and presented him with a smart salute.
"At ease, Private," Ruiz said, returning the salute. "Where you headed?"
"The Modesto, Master Sergeant," I said. "Private Rosenthal and I both."
"You're shitting me,"
Ruiz declared.
"The 233rd? Which company?"
"D, Master Sergeant, 2nd Platoon."
"Out fucking standing, Private,"
Ruiz said.
"You will have the pleasure in serving the platoon of Lieutenant Arthur Keyes, if that dumb son of a bitch hasn't managed to have his ass chewed on by now by some alien or another. When you see him, extend to him my compliments, if you would. You may additionally tell him that Master Sergeant Antonio Ruiz has declared that you are not nearly the dipshit that most of your fellow recruits have turned out to be." "Thank you, Master Sergeant."
"Don't let it go to your head, Private. You are still a dipshit, just not a very big one."
"Of course, Master Sergeant."
"Good. And now, if you will excuse me, sometimes you just gotta hit the road."
Master Sergeant Ruiz saluted. Alan and I saluted back. Ruiz glanced at us both, offered a tight, tight smile, and then walked away without looking back.
"That man scares the shit out of me," Alan said.
"I don't know. I kind of like him."
"Of course you do. He thinks you're almost not a dipshit. That's a compliment in his world."
"I don't think I don't know it," I said. "Now all I have to do is live up to it."
"You'll manage," Alan said. "After all, you do still get to be a dipshit."
"That's comforting," I said.
"At least I'll have company."
Alan grinned. The shuttle doors opened. We grabbed our stuff and went inside.
Chapter 9.
"I can take a shot," Watson said, sighting over his boulder. "Let me drill one of those things."
"No," said Viveros, our corporal. "Their shield is still up. You'd just be wasting ammo."
"Oh, this is bullshit," Watson said. "We've been here for hours. We're sitting here, they're sitting there. When their shield goes down, we're supposed to what? Walk over and start blasting at them? This isn't the fucking 14th century. We shouldn't make an appointment to start killing the other guy."
Viveros looked irritated.
"Watson, you're not paid to think, so shut the fuck up and get ready. It's not going to be long now, anyway. There's only one thing left in their ritual before we get at it."
"Yeah, what's that?"
Watson said.
"They're going to sing," Vivero said.
Watson smirked.
"What are they going to sing? Show tunes?"
"No," Vivero said. "They're going to sing our deaths."
As if on cue, the massive hemispherical shield enclosing the Khonsu encampment shimmered at the base. I adjusted my eyesight and focused down the several hundred meters across the field as a single Khonsu stepped through, the shield lightly sticking to its massive carapace until it moved far enough away for the electrostatic filaments to collapse back into the shield. He was the third and final Khonsu that would emerge out of the shield before the battle. The first had appeared nearly 12 hours ago, a low-ranking grunt whose bellowing challenge served to formally signal the Khonsu's intent to battle. The low rank of the messenger was meant to convey the minimal regard in which our troops were held by the Khonsu, the idea being that if we had been really important, they would have sent a higher up. None of our troops took offense. The messenger was always of low rank, regardless of opponent, and anyway, unless you are extraordinarily sensitive to Khonsu pheromones, they pretty much all look alike. The second Khonsu emerged from behind the shield several hours later, bellowed like a herd of cows caught in a thresher, and then promptly exploded,
pinkish blood and bits of his organs and carapace momentarily splashing against the Khonsu's shield and sizzling lightly as they drizzled down to the ground. Apparently, the Khonsu believed that if a single soldier was ritually prepared beforehand, its soul can be persuaded to reconnoiter the enemy for a set amount of time before moving on to wherever it is Khonsu souls go, or something along that line. This is a signal honor, not lightly given. This seemed to me to be a fine way to lose your best soldiers in a hurry, but given that I was one of the enemy, it was hard to see the downside for us in the practice. This third Khonsu was a member of the highest caste, and his role was simply to tell us the reasons for our death and manner by which we would all die, after which point we would actually get to the killing and dying. Any attempt to hasten things along by preemptively taking a shot at the shield would be useless. Short of dropping it into a stellar core, there was very little that could ding a Khonsu shield. Killing a messenger would accomplish nothing other than causing the opening rituals to be restarted, delaying the fighting and killing even more. Besides, the Khonsu weren't hiding behind the shield. They just had a lot of pre-battle rituals to take care of, and they preferred that they were not interrupted by the inconvenient appearance of bullets, particle beams, or explosives. Truth was, there was nothing the Khonsu liked better than a good fight. They thought nothing of the idea of tromping off to some planet, setting themselves down, and daring the natives to pry them off in battle. Which was the case here. The Khonsu were entirely disinterested in colonizing this planet. They had merely blasted a human colony here into bits as a way of letting the CDF know they were in the neighborhood and looking for some action. Ignoring the Khonsu wasn't a possibility, as they'd simply keep killing off colonists until someone came to fight them on a formal basis. You never knew what they'd consider enough for a formal challenge, either. You just kept adding troops until a Khonsu messenger came out and announced the battle. Aside from their impressive, impenetrable shields, the Khonsu's battle technology was of a similar level as the CDF's. This was not as encouraging as you might think, as what reports filtered back from Khonsu battles with other species indicated that the Khonsu's weaponry and technology was always more or less matched with that of their opponent. This added to the idea that what the Khonsu were engaging in was not war, but sports. Not unlike a football game, except with slaughtered colonists in the place of proper spectators. Striking first against Khonsu was not an option. Their entire inner home system was shielded. The energy to generate the shield came from the white dwarf companion of the Khonsu sun. It had been completely encased with some sort of harvesting mechanism so that all the energy coming off it would fuel the shield. Realistically speaking, you just don't fuck with people who can do that. But the Khonsu had a weird honor system. Clean them off a planet in battle, and they didn't come back. It was like the battle was the vaccination and we were the antiviral. All of this information was provided by our mission database, which our commanding officer, Lieutenant Keyes, had directed us to access and read before the battle. The fact that Watson didn't seem to know any of this meant he hadn't accessed the report. This was not entirely surprising, since from the first moment I met Watson, it was clear that he was the sort of cocky, willfully ignorant son of a bitch who would get himself or his squadmates killed. My problem was, I was his squadmate. The Khonsu unfolded its slashing arms, specialized at some point in their evolution to deal with some unimaginably horrifying creature on their home world, most likely, and underneath its more recognizably arm-like forelimbs raised to the sky. "It's starting," Vivero said.
"I could pop him so easy," Watson said.
"Do it and I'll shoot you myself," Vivero said. The sky cracked with a sound like God's own rifle shot, followed by what sounded like a chainsaw ripping through a tin roof. The Khonsu was singing. I accessed Asshole and had it translate from the beginning.
"Behold, honored adversaries," it began. "We are the instruments of your joyful death. In our ways we have blessed you. The spirit of the best among us has sanctified our battle. We will praise you as we move among you and sing your souls saved to their rewards. It is not your fortune to have been born among the people, so we set you upon the path that leads to redemption. Be brave and fight with fierceness, that you may come into our fold at your rebirth. This blessed battle hallows the ground, and all who die and are born here, henceforth, are delivered."
"Damn, that's loud,"
Watson said, sticking a finger in his left ear and twisting. I doubted he had bothered to get a translation.
"This isn't a war or a football game, for Christ's sake," I said to Viveros. "This is a baptism."
Viveros shrugged. "CDF doesn't think so. This is how they start every battle. They think it's their equivalent of the national anthem. It's just ritual. Look, the shield's coming down." She motioned towards the shield, which was now flickering and failing across its entire length.
"About fucking time," Watson said. "I was about to take a nap."
"Listen to me, both of you," Vivero said. "Stay calm, stay focused, and keep your ass down. We've got a good position here, and the lieutenant wants us to snipe these bastards as they come down. Nothing flashy, just shoot them in the thorax. That's where their brains are. Everyone we get means one less for the rest of them to worry about. Rifle shots only, anything else is just going to give us away faster. Cut the chatter. Brain pals only from here on out. You get me?"
"We get you," I said.
"Fucking A,"
Watson said. "Excellent," Vivero said. The shield finally failed, and the field separating human and Khonsu was instantly streaked with the trails of rockets which had been sighted and readied for hours. The concussive burps of their explosions were immediately followed by human screams and the metallic chirps of Khonsu. For a few seconds there was nothing but smoke and silence. Then a long, serrated cry as the Khonsu surged forward to engage the humans, who in turn kept their positions and tried to cut down as many Khonsu as they could before their two fronts collided.
"Let's get to it," Vivero said.
And with that she raised her MP, sighted it on some far distant Khonsu, and began to fire. We quickly followed. How to prepare for battle. First, systems check your MP-35 infantry rifle. This is the easy part. MP-35s are self-monitoring and self-repairing and can, in a pinch, use material from an ammunition block as raw material to fix a malfunction. Just about the only way you can permanently ruin an MP is to place it in the path of a firing maneuvering thruster. Inasmuch as you're likely to be attached to your weapon at the time, if this is the case, you have other problems to worry about. Second, put on your war suit. This is the standard self-sealing body-length unitard that covers everything but the face. The unitard is designed to let you forget about your body for the length of the battle. The fabric of organized nanobots lets in light for photosynthesis and regulates heat. Stand on an Arctic floe or a Saharan sand dune, and the only difference your body notes is the visual change in scenery. If you somehow managed to sweat, your unitard wicks it away, filters it, and stores the water until you can transfer it to a canteen. You can deal with urine this way, too. Defecating in your unitard is generally not recommended. Get a bullet in your gut, or anywhere else, and the unitard stiffens at the point of impact and transfers the energy across the surface of the suit, rather than allowing the bullet to burrow through. This is massively painful, but better than letting a bullet ricochet merrily through your intestines. This only works up to a point, alas, so avoiding enemy fire is still the order of the day. Add your belt, which includes your combat knife, your multi-purpose tool, which is what a Swiss Army knife wants to be when it grows up, an impressively collapsible personal shelter, your canteen, a week's worth of energy wafers, and 3 slots for ammo blocks.
Smear your face with a nanobot-laden cream that interfaces with your unitard to share environmental information. Switch on your camouflage. Try to find yourself in the mirror. Third, open a brain pal channel to the rest of your squad and leave it open until you return to the ship or you die. I thought I was pretty smart to think of this in boot camp, but it turns out to be one of the holiest of unofficial rules during the heat of battle. Brain pal communication means no unclear commands or signals, and no speaking to give away your position. If you hear a CDF soldier during the heat of battle, it's because he is either stupid or screaming because he's been shot. The only drawback to brain pal communication is that your brain pal can also send emotional information if you're not paying attention. This can be distracting if you suddenly feel like you're going to piss yourself in fright, only to realize it's not you who's about to cut loose on the bladder, but your squad mate. It's also something none of your squad mates will ever let you live down. Link only to your squad mates. Try to keep a channel open to your entire platoon and suddenly 60 people are cursing, fighting, and dying inside your head. You do not need this. Finally, forget everything except to follow orders. Kill anything that's not human and stay alive. The CDF makes it simple to do this. For the first 2 years of service, every soldier is infantry. No matter if you were a janitor or surgeon, senator or street bum in your previous life. If you make it through the first 2 years, then you get the chance to specialize, to earn a permanent colonial billet instead of wandering from battle to battle, and to fill in the niche and support roles every military body has. But for 2 years, all you have to do is go where they tell you, stay behind your rifle, and kill and not be killed. It's simple. But simple isn't the same as easy. It took 2 shots to bring down a Khonsu soldier. This was new. None of the intelligence on them mentioned personal shielding, but something was allowing them to take the first hit. It sprawled them on whatever you might consider to be their asses, but they were up again in a matter of seconds. So 2 shots, one to take them down and one to keep them down. 2 shots in sequence on the same moving target is not easily accomplished when you're firing across a few hundred meters of very busy battleground. After figuring this one out, I had Asshole create a specialized firing routine that shot 2 bullets on 1 trigger pull, the first a hollow tip, and the second with an explosive charge. The specification was relayed to my MP between shots. 1 second I was squeezing off single standard issue rifle ammo, the next I was shooting my Khonsu Killer Special. I loved my rifle. I forwarded the firing specification to Watson and Viveros. Viveros forwarded it up the chain of command. Within about a minute, the battlefield was peppered with the sound of rapid double shots, followed by dozens of Khonsu puffing out as the explosive charges strained their internal organs against the insides of their carapaces. It sounded like popcorn popping. I glanced over at Viveros. She was emotionlessly sighting and shooting. Watson was firing and grinning like a boy who just won a stuffed animal at the State Farm BB shoot. "Uh-oh," sent Viveros. "We're spotted. Get down."
"What?"
Watson said, and poked his head up. I grabbed him and pulled down as the rockets slammed into the boulders we'd been using for cover. We were pelted with newly formed gravel. I looked up just in time to see a chunk of boulder the size of a bowling ball twirling madly down towards my skull. I swatted at it without thinking. The suit went hard down the length of my arm and the chunk flew off like a lazy softball. My arm ached. In my other life, I'd be the proud owner of 3 new, short, likely terribly misaligned arm bones. I wouldn't be doing that again.
"Holy shit, that was close," said Watson.
"Shut up,"
I said, and sent to Viveros.
"What now?"
"Hold tight,"
she sent, and took her multi-purpose tool of her belt. She ordered it into a mirror, then used it to peek over the edge of her boulder.
6, no, 7, on their way up.
There was a sudden crump close by.
"Make that 5,
she corrected, and closed up her tool. Set for grenades, then follow up, then we move. I nodded. Watson grinned, and when Viveros sent go, we all pumped grenades over the boulders. I counted three each. After 9 explosions, I exhaled, prayed, popped up and saw the remains of one Khonsu, another dragging itself dazedly away from our position, and 2 scrambling for cover. Viveros got the wounded one. Watson and I each plugged 1 of the other 2.
"Welcome to the party, you shitheads!"
Watson whooped, and then bobbled up exultantly over his boulder just in time to get it in the face from the 5th Khonsu, who had gotten ahead of the grenades and had stayed low while we mopped up its friends. The Khonsu leveled a barrel at Watson's nose and fired. Watson's face cratered inward, and then outward as a geyser of smart blood and tissue that used to be Watson's head sprayed over the Khonsu. Watson's unitard, designed to stiffen when hit by projectiles, did just that when the shot hit the back of his hood, pressuring the shot, the smart blood, and bits of skull, brain, and brain pal back out the only readily available opening. Watson didn't know what hit him. The last thing he sent through his brain pal channel was a wash of emotion that could best be described as disoriented puzzlement, the mild surprise of someone who knows he's seeing something he wasn't expecting but hasn't figured out what it is. Then his connection was cut off, like a data feed suddenly, unexpectedly shut down. The Khonsu who shot Watson sang as it blew his face apart. I had left my translation circuit on, and so I saw Watson's death subtitled, the word redeemed repeated over and over while bits of his head formed weeping droplets on the Khonsu's thorax. I screamed and fired. The Khonsu slammed backwards, and then its body exploded as bullet after bullet dug under its thoracic plate and detonated. I figured I wasted 30 rounds on an already dead Khonsu before I stopped.
"Barry," Vivero said, switching back to her voice to snap me out of whatever I was in. "More on the way. Time to move. Let's go."
"What about Watson?" I asked.
"Leave him," Vivero said. "He's dead and you're not, and there's no one to mourn him out here anyway. We'll come for the body later. Let's go. Let's stay alive."
We won. The double bullet rifle technique thinned out the Khonsu herd by a substantial amount before they got wise and moved to switch tactics, falling back to launch rocket attacks rather than to make another frontal assault. After several hours of this, the Khonsu fell back completely and fired up their shield, leaving behind a squad to ritually commit suicide, signaling the Khonsu acceptance of their loss. After they had plunged their ceremonial knives into their brain cavity, all that was left was to collect our dead and what wounded had been left in the field. For the day, 2nd Platoon came through pretty well. 2 dead, including Watson, and 4 wounded, only 1 seriously. She'd be spending the next month growing back her lower intestine, while the other 3 would be up and back on duty in a matter of days. All things considered, things could have been worse. A Khonsu-armored hovercraft had rammed its way toward 4th Platoon Company C's position and detonated, taking 16 of them with it, including the platoon commander and 2 squad leaders, and wounding much of the rest of the platoon. If 4th Platoon's lieutenant weren't already dead, I'd suspect he'd be wishing he were after a clusterfuck like that. After we received an all-clear from Lieutenant Keyes, I went back to get Watson. A group of 8-legged scavengers were already at him. I shot 1, and that encouraged the rest to disperse. They had made impressive progress on him in a short amount of time. I was sort of darkly surprised at how much less someone weighed after you subtracted his head and much of his soft tissues. I put what was left of him in a fireman's carry and started on the couple of clicks to the temporary morgue. I had to stop and vomit only once. Alan spied me on the way in.
"Need any help?"
he said, coming up alongside me.
"I'm fine," I said.
"He's not heavy anymore."
"Who is it?"
Alan said. Watson, I said.
Oh, him, Alan said, and grimaced. Well, I'm sure someone somewhere will miss him.
Try not to get all weepy on me, I said. How did you do today?
Not bad, Alan said. I kept my head down most of the time, poked my rifle up every now and then, and shot a few rounds in the general direction of the enemy. I may have hit something. I don't know.
Did you listen to the death chant before the battle?
Of course I did, Alan said. It sounded like two freight trains mating. It's not something you can choose not to hear.
No, I said. I mean, did you get a translation? Did you listen to what it was saying?
Yeah, Alan said. I'm not sure I like their plan for converting us to their religion, seeing as it involves dying and all.
Yeah, the CDF seems to think it's just ritual, like it's a prayer they recite because it's something they've always done, I said.
What do you think? Alan asked.
I jerked my head back to indicate Watson. The Khonsu that killed him was screaming, "Redeemed, redeemed," as loud as he could. And I'm sure he'd have done the same thing while he was gutting me. I'm thinking the CDF is underestimating what's going on here. I think the reason the Khonsu don't come back after one of these battles isn't because they think they've lost. I don't think this battle is really about winning or losing. By their lights, this planet is now consecrated by blood. I think they own it now.
Then why don't they occupy it?
Maybe it's not time, I said. Maybe they have to wait until some sort of Armageddon. But my point is, I don't think the CDF knows whether the Khonsu consider this their property now or not. I think somewhere down the line they're going to be mightily surprised.
Okay, I'll buy that, Alan said. Every military I've ever heard of has a history of smugness, but what do you propose to do about it?
Shit, Alan, I haven't the slightest idea, I said. Other than to try to be long dead when it happens.
On an entirely different, less depressing subject, Alan said. Good job thinking up the firing solution for the battle. Some of us were really getting pissed off that we'd shoot those bastards and they'd just get up and keep coming. You're going to get your drinks bought for you for the next couple of weeks.
We don't pay for drinks, I said. This is an all-expense tour of hell, if you'll recall.
Well, if we did, you would, Alan said.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not that big of a deal, I said, and then noticed that Alan had stopped and was standing at attention. I looked up and saw Viveros, Lieutenant Keyes, and some officer I didn't recognize striding towards me. I stopped and waited for them to reach me.
Perry,
Lieutenant Keyes said.
Lieutenant, I said. Please forgive the lack of salute, sir. I'm carrying a dead body to the morgue.
That's where they go, Keyes said, and motioned at the corpse.
Who is that?
Watson, sir.
Oh, him,
Keyes said.
Well, that didn't take very long, did it?
He was excitable, sir, I said.
Yeah, I suppose he was, Keyes said.
Well, anyway, Perry, this is Lieutenant Colonel Rybicki, the 233rd's commander.
Sir,
I said.
Sorry about not saluting.
Yes, dead body, I know, said Rybicki. Son, I just wanted to congratulate you on your firing solution today. You saved a lot of time and lives. Those Khonsu bastards keep switching things up on us. Those personal shields were a new touch, and they were giving us a hell of a lot of trouble there. I'm putting you in for a commendation, Private. What do you think about that?
Thank you, sir, I said.
But I'm sure someone else would have figured it out eventually.
Probably, but you figured it out first, and that counts for something.
Yes, sir.
When we get back to the Modesto, I hope you'll let an old infantryman buy you a drink, son.
I'd like that, sir, I said.
I saw Alan smirk in the background.
Well, then, congratulations again.
Rybicki motioned at Watson.
And, sorry about your friend.
Thank you, sir.
Alan saluted for the both of us. Rybicki saluted back and wheeled off, followed by Keyes. Viveros turned back to me and Alan.
You seem amused, Viveros said to me.
I was just thinking that it's been about 50 years since anyone called me son, I said.
Viveros smiled and indicated Watson.
You know where you're taking him? She asked.
Yeah, morgue's just over that ridge, I said. I'm going to drop off Watson, and then I'd like to catch the first transport back to the Modesto, if that's okay.
Shit, Perry, Vivero said. You're the hero of the day. You can do anything you want.
She turned to go.
Hey, Viveros, I said. Is it always like this?
She turned back.
Is what always like this?
Well, this, I said. War, battles, fighting.
What? Vivero said, and then snorted. Hell no, Perry. Today was a cakewalk. This is as easy as it gets.
And then she trotted off, highly amused. That was how my first battle went. My era of war had begun.